Blog Talk Radio.
Live from Washington, D.C., it's Quintessential Listening, Poetry Online Radio. QLPOR, as it's widely known, features a bevy of poets, spoken word artists, and live poetry readings with best-selling authors. Your host is Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram.
Good evening, everyone. I am Michael Anthony Ingram. Welcome to the program. Diana Wilson is an essayist, flash writer, and poet whose first full-length book of flash and poetry, High Stakes and Expectations, was released in spring 2002 from the Tiny Publisher. She is also the author of 13 nonfiction books on food, beverage, and lifestyle topics. And she also writes about tea, coffee, and spices from various websites. She's incredible. Diana, welcome to the program.
Hi there. But enough about me. What do you think about me?
What do I think about you? You're great.
That's right. That's something that we learn here in Hollywood, where somebody talks about themselves all the time and they say, oh, enough about my movie. What did you think about my movie? So you made me sound very famous, but I am prolific. You know, I don't know how far and wide, but it's been a great writing journey, and I've enjoyed it very much.
Well, tonight, you're a superstar, all right? A poetic superstar.
Right.
And we're going to continue this journey together. Let's begin. What is poetry?
Okay. You know, that's a wonderful question, and I don't have a Merriam-Webster answer, but the Diana Rosen answer is poetry is a way to connect with words and hopefully with the tools of metaphor, simile, and image.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny. I don't like dictionary answers. I like people to share with me what poetry is from their heart. That's the most important thing to me. That's the most important thing. Is there anything else you want to share about poetry?
I like what the poet Stanley Kunitz said. He said to always end with an image and don't explain.
Oh, wow.
Which I think is just delightful, you know.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Knowing what you know about poetry, why is it important?
I think we only have to look at the last few years of the pandemic here to understand that poetry sales have rocketed. People have turned to poetry during this incredibly strange and wacky time because I think poetry is a medium of comfort. Lots of people who never pick up a book about poetry do go to poetry when they're facing some sort of grief, whether it's the loss of a person, a loss of a job, or in this case, kind of loss of mobility because we couldn't go anywhere and do things in the way that we were used to. It changed our life. And I was thrilled to learn that poetry was doing so well. And I think that's why we need it, because it comforts.
Wow. I agree 100%. I really agree. So as you think about your work, what are some of the predominant themes?
Like in themes or ideas?
Yes, theme. Yeah. When you think about your body of work,
well,
what do you write about most?
Jim, because organizing a book is really difficult. Because unless you are always writing about one particular theme, like love or grief or something like that, or if you are telling a story in poetry, it's really hard to organize the book. And I gave the manuscript to one of my professors, and she kept writing these things on the notes in the margins. Ooh, risky. You know, high stakes here. Ooh, this is a challenge. And I thought, oh, okay. So I put all the poems that kind of reflected the challenges or the high stakes of living in the first part. And then I gave the title Expectations to the second part, because essentially I'm an optimistic person. And
all right.
So my expectation is that no matter how crappy things are today, tomorrow will be better. And so that's kind of the thought behind my book, that we go through trials and tribulations, but it's okay. In fact, it's almost imperative to expect something better come down the line. Because we do get what we expect.
I like that. Please share a piece.
Okay. This first piece is called Final Jeopardy. And a lot of people have been fans of the TV show, and we've had mixed reactions to how it changed. But I wrote this poem many years ago before the demise of Mr. Trebek. And it's called Final Jeopardy. In his remote, lingering limbo, he stares at the flickering light, silent, phrased questions to the professorial host. His noted wit, shadowed by the pea soup room, his breath, assisted by the gunmetal oxygen tank, harmonizing with the television's drone, nodding to his own image mirrored on the screen, he speaks for the first time in days. Why doesn't that guy just go? Correct, Alex answers, for $400.
Thank you. Wow. I miss Alex Trebek. I really do. But we all have a journey that ends.
Right. And I thought that my adjective, professorial, that he was a professor, in tone and demeanor, was a good choice. And he was a philosophy major, apparently. So I guess that's what happens to philosophy majors. They either become comedians or game show hosts. So, I don't know if it's a requirement, but a lot of them are.
All right. So High Stakes and Expectations was primarily – why did you write that particular book at this time? Was it primarily due to the pandemic, or there were some other factors?
I joke that this book is 20 years in the making, because some of these poems have followed me for a long time, because either I couldn't let go or I thought they weren't ready to be let go. And some of the poems are fairly recent. But the pandemic gave me the time and the wherewithal to really say, okay, now's the time. Get it all together, put them together, and get it out there.
you know, so many people during the pandemic, it was like a transformation. Who were you as a writer during the pandemic? What did you discover about yourself?
I was the happiest camper there was, because the idea of having to be stuck with my computer in my room with my books and my CDs was like heaven. I didn't know what everybody was complaining about. And because I write about artisanal teas and coffees and high-end food products, I was busier than ever, because people were ordering from my clients in higher amounts than they normally did. So they were keeping me busier writing more stories than I normally would write for their website. So I lucked out like a bandit, as they say. So I know it was very hard for people who aren't used to being by themselves much. And I think that's a very poignant place to be, to find yourself either by yourself or just with one or two people and not have the stimulation of outside activity. And not everybody has cultivated the habits or the character or the courage or whatever word you want to use to be comfortable with their own skin. And so when all by themselves, they get upset.
Yes.
But there's poetry, and they can turn to poetry.
Yeah. Well, let's go back in your history. Let's go back in your history. What was an early poem that you developed that assisted you understand the power of poetry?
That I wrote or that I read?
That you wrote. Yes, ma'am.
You know, there's a poem that I wrote quite a few years ago. In fact, when I was first starting out writing poetry, and I did include it here. It's called, it had the initials HHKK for Hug, Hug, Kiss, Kiss. But,
all right.
Would you like me to read it?
If you have it, that'd be wonderful.
It just happens to be on page 37 of my new book.
Fantastic.
So, okay. All right. So it's called HHKK. If I were going to hug you, it wouldn't be a hug, hug, kiss, kiss sort of hug. If I were going to hug you, it wouldn't be a showbiz air kiss, leaning in to the void between us. No, if I was going to hug you, my palms would cover your hands, my fingers circle around the back of your wrist, a gentle stethoscope feeling for the pulse of you. Then ski upward over the sand dunes of your arms. My left arm would seek that deep impression in the back of your waist. Discover each vertebrae, memorizing each one. Sweep the silky hairs on your nape. Together, my hands would smooth your furrowed brow, your still, soft fullness of your lips. My face would nose kiss the coolness of your throat. My body brushing yours, hello. if I were going to hug you. Thank you.
Wow. That was exquisite.
Thank you.
That really was. I need a moment. I need a moment.
Okay.
Diane.
All right. Well, all right. Shall we turn on some music? Will that help you?
No, I think I'll be okay. You know, in that particular piece, and I'm a listener, your voice was different. It was different. So what I'd like to know is what is the relationship between your speaking voice and your written voice, if there's a relationship?
Well, I think I have several voices when I write, because I do write for different media.
Yes.
And also, this brings up a very interesting point. I don't always enjoy reading my poems out loud, because it's like giving them away. And yet, I need to reframe that and realize I'm just sharing, and I do want to share my poems with other people. And I have a bit of an issue with how some poets read their poems. They use a certain uptone cadence at the end of their lines, and they're not really sharing the emotion of what they're writing, even though they might write something really explosively emotional. So I guess this is a roundabout way of saying that when I speak my poems out loud, I want to emphasize by tone or inflection or by pauses the feeling that I intend to communicate. And I hope I do. You will be the judge of that, or your listeners.
Well, that was a powerful way to share the point. We Diana, you and I are brother and sister from different mothers, because that's exactly what I believe. Exactly what you said. I believe that. And that's how I share my work in the same fashion.
Good to hear.
Well, let me ask this question.
Great.
Yes. Let me ask this question.
I think
you talked about emotion. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Were you going to say something?
No, that's all right.
Okay.
No. I'd rather answer your questions.
Okay. So here's my question now. So you talked about emotion, the importance of emotion. Do you think a poet can call him or herself a poet if they don't show strong emotions?
That's a very interesting question. You know, there are two levels of poems or poetry. One is the poems that we read. And so we are kind of meeting the poet on the page, and we are bringing ourselves to the page. And it's a little one-dimensional. But when we are in a poetry reading and listening to a poet, there's the added dimensions of listening to the sound of his or her voice, watching their body language, listening to all those elements that make a voice interesting or not interesting. And the added thing is the audience. It's like being in a movie theater. You know, you can feel people reacting to the images on the screen. Well, you can do that in a poetry reading too. You know, people get excited about something that they're listening to. And so it becomes a form of theater when you hear, you know, you have the opportunity to listen to a poet speaking their poems, reading their poems out loud. So there are a lot of factors about listening to a poem. I think it's very complicated, and one of the Associated Writing Program conventions where a lot of poets go to read their work, I noticed that in the last two meetings, they are now having workshops for helping poets present their poetry in a livelier manner and learning how to be directed. Because it's not enough just to read your poems. Mm-hmm. And so many poets are introverts, and they
yes.
may be emotional furnaces, you know, roaring, burning up inside and writing really hot poems, but the idea of saying them out loud is anathema to them. They just can barely say their name, let alone read their poem. Or they are so shy that they mumble, or they are inverting their bodies so much that it's as if they were bent in a downward dog yoga position rather than standing up and shouting their words. So there are a lot of factors to why a poet can put over their poetry well. A lot of times it's just innate shyness, inexperience in public speaking or presenting their work verbally. And as an audience, we have to give them a little break. But also, as a poet, I think they owe it to their audience to learn some rather simple skills and techniques for putting their work over. And I hope more people do.
Well, let me ask this question.
I don't know if that answers your question.
Beautifully stated. It did. Beautifully stated. I loved every word. Beautifully stated. So how important is it for you to take part in poetry readings? Do you do that in other live events where you can practice what you're sharing, practice what you preach?
I really love it, but I am still a COVID-shy person. My idea of a crowd is three people. So that I haven't been as enthusiastic for in-person readings as I have for Zoom meetups. They're not
yes,
the same thing. But
I love Zoom.
The situation here in Los Angeles is not scary, but people are still dying every day, and about 2,000 people every day are coming down with the virus. So that made me a little uncomfortable about going into a crowd of people at a bookstore where there isn't a lot of room between the seats and between the customers. But maybe you can tell I'm a little bit of a ham. I can be coerced into performing.
Just a little.
But for the moment, I haven't done as much because I guess I'm just waiting to feel more comfortable being out in public in a crowd.
Well, let me ask this question. When you think about a poem or writing poetry, and you just mentioned the Zoom meetings, do the internet and social media contribute to the well-being of poetry?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Talk to me.
I love it. Well, I'm a class junkie. I love to take classes online and Zoom, and that's been another bonus of the lockdown and the pandemic years, is I've taken advantage of a lot of classes that are available and a lot of back and forth exchange between other poets and between the teachers or instructors and the writers. And I really feel like I learned a lot. And it was like being in a live class because we could see each other on the split screen, but nobody had to drive. They didn't have to park. You know, they didn't have to do all the stuff you have to do when you go to a schoolroom or a classroom somewhere. But I took many classes. And then I think the other thing about the internet is you are trying to think of a poem written by a certain poet, and you may or you may not have that book, but you can just put one line or a group of words from that poem into Google, and bing, 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 there's the poem.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you can use it however you want to inspire you or to share it with somebody else or to see how a poet used a certain form, like a villanelle or a sonnet, to describe a certain event. And so all these tools and access is just fantastic. I love it. And the other thing is, I think you said you have been doing this show for 5 years, right?
But yes.
There's also been an explosion of podcasts, and mm-hmm. a lot of them have incorporated poetry and other writing. And this has been tremendous as a way of getting the word out about who's writing what now, but also in kind of reacquainting ourselves with poems that we may have learned in high school or college, or poems that we read in our 20s and 30s and may have forgotten about. So between the internet, between classes and podcasts, the opportunity to enhance our knowledge of and appreciation of poetry, I think, has been fantastic.
Wow. You know, before we take a brief break, have you ever taught a poetry class?
Yes, I have.
And something told me you had.
Right.
That's wonderful.
Well,
because I was thinking, she can't help hold on to all this talent and not use it.
Oh,
all right,
okay.
Let me calm down.
Okay. Well, should we take a break first, and then I'll tell you
yes.
about the teaching?
Thank
okay.
you. You can tell I got excited.
Okay.
Here we go. Michael Anthony Ingram. I am here with Diana Rosen. You can tell I'm excited. Talk to me, Diana. Talk to me about your experience as a teacher.
All right. Quite a few years ago, I had the opportunity to work with visiting writers at a local bookstore. And one of the programs that the bookstore offered was a free class on poetry. And the method was the free write concept that Natalie Goldberg created, where you give somebody a prompt, you write for a certain amount of time, and then you can share it or not share. So that's pretty much what I used when I was teaching classes. I taught at some local senior citizen centers. I also did some private classes with invited students, and a couple times people invited me to be a guest teacher at an established program. So I used some of the things that I learned from my teachers about free writing, and there are a gazillion prompts, and there is no end to them, but I thought it was important to select prompts that were tailored to the audience. So I wasn't going to do a prompt about rap music for some people who were senior citizens who might not embrace that. And for younger kids, I didn't do anything that could be considered old-fashioned. I would try to tailor the prompt to common themes that they would enjoy. But I found that the best thing that I ever did was to use tangible prompts. And these were items that I bought from my house, things that I thought were kind of cool. And some of them were a challenge for people depending on their age. Mm-hmm. Like I brought a thimble. And so anybody under 50 didn't know what the heck a thimble was because nobody's mending their hems or their or replacing their buttons on their shirts anymore. But once I told them what it was, they could create some sort of story with it. I brought, I'm a deltaologist. A deltaologist is somebody who collects postcards. And I like to collect postcards that are quirky, that have some sort of story on the cover. But I also had postcards of very famous and familiar places. So I just toss out some and ask people to take one or two and use the postcard as a prompt to write about. And it was always fantastic to listen to the different ways that some people would look at the same postcard and come away with entirely different interpretations mm-hmm. of the image.
I'm sure.
That was a great deal of fun.
Oh, wow.
So,
you know, my
so
listening
that's
ear never fails me. I'll say it one more time. My listening ear never fails me. Diana, please share a piece.
You want me to share another poem? Okay.
Another thing to do
In lieu of a prompt is to do a response poem. And one way to interpret that is you take a poem that's familiar to you and you respond to each line of the poem with something else. And then all your responses are put together and that becomes a new poem. So I made a response poem from the poem by Derek Walcott called Love After Love. So this is called Love After Love after Derek Walcott. Tomorrow, sooner, you will release what was suppressed from the dark place you lived. You will see her, connect, and you will feel hunger for life, for the moment. Today, you will hug the fear, kiss the doubt, share wine, bread, your heart. Be not afraid. Embrace. Weep happiness. Step out of the costume of silence. Put on the cloak of courage. read your story as if freshly inked. A coda. This. Smile. Circle your arms around you. Trust. Joy. Thank you.
I know that is a response poem, and it was beautiful as all yours. What's the purpose of that poem?
The purpose is to remind people that life and love and joy is in you, are in you, take a chance. Jump.
Take a chance. All right. So is a poem letting your guard down or building a wall?
Would you say that again?
Is a poem letting your guard down or building a wall?
Interesting. Well, I hope it is tearing down walls.
Okay.
And
okay.
Being open. But my poems are perceived as up to the reader. I don't have any control over that. I may have a certain intention, but if they don't get it, they don't get it. And everybody brings their entire life experience to every page they read.
Mm-hmm.
And there is nothing I can do about that.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people who are skittish or nervous about love poems. There are some people who don't want poems about war and pestilence and plague. Everybody has issues and concerns, but the writer can't think too much about that. The writer has to write what they need to write about in the way that they want to write about it. And
all right, all right. Well, let me ask you this:
can and then let it fly.
All right. Well, the next one is two parts. The first piece is, tell me about a poem you were proud of writing but afraid to share for fear of misinterpretation. You see why they pay me the big bucks, Diana?
Yeah.
Do you see why they pay me the big bucks?
I don't think that question was on the list. Let's see.
No.
Did I change my mind about a poet?
Yes, of course. This is your hour.
Okay.
This is your journey.
Well, I was thinking about Margaret Atwood.
Okay.
A lot of people think of Margaret Atwood for The Handmaid's Tale and dystopian novels and all that stuff. And I'm not a dystopian fan, but her poetry is fabulous. It's very witty. It's very droll. She takes no prisoners. She puts up with no caca, no baloney. And she's hilarious. And I just sort of stumbled upon her. I really got sucked into her work, and now I think I have several of her books. And then there are some poets that I really loved when I was younger, and now, Dora Richard Brautigan, who was probably the first contemporary poet I ever read, and he was, a hippy-dippy in Haight-Ashbury and a lot of that period of time washed over him. And he was fun. He was very colloquial and vernacular and contemporary of his era. And it hasn't aged all that well for me.
Mm-hmm.
But I still have gone back to him every once in a while because his writing kind of gives me a shot in the arm that I can try something different, but not necessarily how or what he did. But his writing is a reminder to me that mm-hmm. I can take chances, try new things. So
speaking of taking chances,
you know,
I'm sorry, go ahead. Well,
you know, I take change.
I know it's true. So speaking of taking chances, so you've never written a poem that you felt may have been too much, that you feared it would be misinterpreted by somebody, because we live in that kind of world.
I am not somebody who worries about what anybody thinks about me or anything that I write.
I do
a lot of writing for money, and the people who pay me money have a right mm-hmm. to say, do something different, or do it this way or that way. But for my poetry and short fiction, you know, an editor can take it or leave it.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't get. I'm not upset about rejections or people liking or not liking what I write. I'm really writing for me, and the reason I send things out to journals and try to get a lot of work published is a pure exercise in ego, so I can say somebody else liked me. But if they don't, mm-hmm. it's okay, because I'm going to still write. I'm still going to write what I want to write. And if something is just gets a kind of a glazed look over an audience every time I mm-hmm. read it or share mm-hmm. it, I say to myself, you know, I bet that could be improved. So that's my mm-hmm. attitude. Can mm-hmm. I make it better so that it'll be interesting? I don't have to be loved, but I'm boring. That's like a knife to my heart. So
I love your answer. I love your answer.
I love it. That's why I like to take classes a lot. You know,
mm-hmm.
I feel like I could find another idea or another way of approaching a poem that can make it better. And, mm-hmm. You know, throughout my writing life, I've always been an editor, not only for my own work, but for other people's work. And I think that's
right.
One of the sidebar skills that any short story slash or poetry writer should really embrace. And that is the idea that editing is a positive, and slimming down the verbosity in anything is always a good idea. If anything,
I've
sometimes killed so many darlings there wasn't anybody left breathing. But it's really important to be judicious and be thorough as an editor of your own work.
Yes. You're answering all my questions tonight. You can share some flash fiction if you want to.
Okay.
And if you don't, that's fine. we'll keep going. I like hearing you talk.
You say. Okay.
Okay. Thank you, man.
You know, I have really loved the idea of flash fiction which some people still refer to as prose poems. And one of the things I do when I'm writing is I sometimes go back and forth. If I just can't make a poem work because of line breaks or because of rhythm or something like that, I try to fashion it into a flash, because I think the rhythm in a flash helps the storyline sometimes. And then the opposite is true. Sometimes you don't want that pulsing rhythm. You want to have a little bit more pause in between thoughts or ideas. So you might go for a poem. So this is a short flash, and it's called I See You, and it's the initials I See You for a hospital area. I see you. I took the night shift so that I could see the kids off to school. I shower at the hospital even though home is just a few blocks away. I wake up the kids. Jeremy still lets me do it with a hug and a kiss. Anthony, he's in the ma stage. Wants to hear about gunshot wounds, stabbings, freeway crashes. Not babies born with complications. Not heart shunts. Not tumors. Or worse. I pack the kids' lunches, cook oatmeal, top it with cut-up bananas, pour milk, juice. Got a big day ahead, I say. You got your books? Homework? Come straight home. I love you. I shout after them as they saunter to the bus, giggling and tussling, and climb into the golden yellow bus, wave me a goofy goodbye. I sit in my chair, reckon with the silence, try to rock away the night shift, rock away what happens every day to ordinary people just like us.
That was perfect. What do you learn about yourself being a writer? I don't think I asked that before. Or what have you learned about yourself?
That's a really great question. I think I think I learned earlier on that some of the things I didn't want to deal with or didn't want to think about, if I wrote the story about them on a page in any form, the ache of it went away. And then I would go back to what I wrote and approach it as the writer shaping a piece of work. Sometimes that went quickly, and sometimes it took years. But I learned that whatever you're dealing with, whatever you experience when you were 2 or 22 or whenever, if you write it down in a journal, in a diary, wherever, if you just get the words out and put it down on the page, it's almost as if it carries the acid of those moments out of your system, and a balm will form in its place. So yeah. I've never been afraid to do that since.
Yes.
You know, I did it in the beginning just because somebody said, "Oh, write about this, write about that," and it triggered something in me, and I wrote mm-hmm. about something that was very personal. And instead of feeling embarrassed, I was very relieved, and I was that surprised me, that relief. And so I've been doing that for quite a long time.
Wow. I appreciate the way you're able to make your point, and it was accessible. As a professor, as a teacher, that's what information potentially needs to be, accessible, that people can understand it. Beautiful, beautiful. Well, let me ask you this, Diana. So much is happening in our world today. So much. The good, the bad, the ugly, and the indifferent. What I want to know is, what's the role of a poet in modern-day society?
I think your poet is like the canary of the proverbial coal mine. I grew up in a coal mining town, and for many, many years, the miners would send in a canary. And if they dropped dead, they knew that there was too much toxic air for human beings to go in. And so sometimes poets and musicians and painters and dancers, all in all the arts, I think that we're almost tasked with the obligation to warn people that something's coming down the road and you better get off the road if you don't want to get hit. And some people will listen and some people will not. But it's incumbent upon anybody who sees the danger to say something about it. And to not say something is to be a cohort in the crime of what's happening.
Wow.
So some poets are didactic and hysterical and dramatic, and they tend to get a lot of press, but they also don't get a lot of response to helping to solve the problem. But there are many poets doing a really wonderful job of reminding people, especially here in the United States, that we're in charge.
Mm.
And so long as we are registered to vote and able to vote, we can make changes and we can say yes and we can say no. It won't matter if we don't. You know, so
wise.
I think that's what the poet can do.
Love it. We're almost at the end of our journey. So here's the question. Here's the question. What do you hope readers get from encountering your work? What do you want them to walk away with when they finish your book?
Well, I hope they connect with something and that one or more poem resonates with them. It's been kind of mind-boggling to hear, especially from friends who have read my book and for people that I don't know, what either their favorite poem or the one that meant the most to them was. And of about, say, 30 or 40 people that I have spoken to or written to and heard from, nobody has mentioned the same poem twice. I don't know how that can be, but they may have liked 10 poems, but they mention a particular poem, and that poem is one that nobody else has mentioned. And sometimes it's a result of what's going on in the news of the day, and so maybe that poem helped connect them. Maybe they had a nice date that night, and so a love poem resonated. I don't know why. I've asked them why, and nobody's really come up with a very valuable answer. But I just, it's like what Ian Forster said, connect, connect, only connect. And that's what I'm trying to do. And if
all
this
right.
one poem connects with you, I'm thrilled.
Well, I'd like to imagine for a moment that you're on a stage and there's one poem that you need to share before the show is over. So please share one poem. You're on the stage.
Okay. All right. I admit, like a lot of writers, that some things are from real life and some stuff I make up. So you can decide whether I make this up or this is from real life.
All right.
It's called The Hearts of Horses. On a deserted tree lane near the rough shore of Bolinas, a friend and I stop mid-road to talk as poets are wont to do, when a rumble growing louder and louder growls from our right. A herd of mustangs, wild, strong, furious, runs across the road in front of our car and heads south. The rumble, now a soft earth caress, leaving us silent as statues, engraving the sight on memory. Pen this moment, we poets beg the muse to provide. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to answer it. I think it's real.
Okay, yes it is. And for those who don't know what Bolinas is, it's a little city in Marin, in North Marin, and it's full of people from the 60s, and they take great pride and joy in tearing down any directions or street signs or city signs that would indicate how to get to the shore or how to get to the city, in the thinking that if nobody sees the sign, they won't figure out where this utopia is. So that's Bolinas.
We have a caller.
Oh, my goodness.
Would you like me to bring this person on?
Sure.
All right. All right, hold on 1 second here. Area code 630-467. You're on the air with Diana Rosa.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi there.
Hi. Are you there?
Do you have a question?
Yes.
Oh, I go with questions. I'm full of questions. Are you? Hey, listen, can you turn that down a bit? Hey, Michael, how are you doing? This is Michael
Johnson
calling.
Yes, sir. Oh, hello, Michael
how
Johnson.
You
I'm well, sir.
You know who I am, and I know who you are. The only question I've got is why are you so smart and I'm not?
Well, direct your question to Diana, and you and I'll talk later.
Well, actually, I got a couple of comments. I've been listening on my computer, and I only just in the last 5-10 minutes called on the phone. But Diana, I enjoyed several things you said. I really related. It's not so much a question as it is an agreement. I really related to the question that Michael asked about the fear of rejection. Do you have a poem that perhaps you're fearful of that, you know, putting it out there? And I loved your comment because it's exactly the way I feel. I don't have no fear of rejection. All right. You know, it doesn't bother me. But I do remember some, I think it's called The Journal out of England, the editor there, mentioned to me, says, Michael, I like your poetry, but why do you always got to, you know, put the word Jesus in there too often, you know? And I thought about that, and I thought, you know what? I don't really care, you know? And I guess, Diane, what I'm trying to say is I really connected to that because you cannot allow other people, other editors, other publishers, and usually poets are a combination of the above. You can't allow that to happen. We only have one life.
All right.
You know, the other thing, too, is I was going to ask Diane, I was checking my Facebook groups, and I was looking to see if Diane was on any of my Facebook groups that I have since been banned by Facebook. But I know she was not, so I'm missing her there.
Well, what I'll do is send her the links to all of your groups.
Yeah, you
How's
know what,
sound,
Diane, I have, if you don't mind, I have looked up one of your poems that I sort of enjoyed. Would you mind? I made sure it was a short one. Would you mind if I read it?
If you read it?
Yes. He'd like to read it. All right.
You know, but no, seriously, I mean, you know, it's probably, you know, it's not necessarily maybe one of her best or most recent or whatever, but I just happened to snag onto this. Diane, I don't know for sure what the poem is titled. Is it called Lucky Me?
Oh, okay. Yeah, Lucky Me.
Is it called Lucky Me?
Lucky Me,
yes.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. But I noticed that it goes something like this. It was sort of short, and that's the reason I picked it out, but I also liked the basic content of it, especially coming out of California and perhaps some implications from that. But it here it goes something like this. We were on patrol in the damnedest, most isolated place. Dust everywhere, hard to see, harder to breathe, ordered to move on. Check each town, rout out the enemies, meons, days of this, hot and dry nights, a cold pure black, checking houses, schools, shops, nothing, all abandoned. This day, an ordinary Thursday, I led my men on one more patrol. Nothing. And then something. A crack in the silence. Then the roar of hundreds running towards us, firing. I froze speechless, mouth agape. The bullet entered my mouth, escaped through my cheek. Lucky me. Nice poem.
Okay.
Yes, that was...
Thank you.
Diana. It's always good to hear someone share your work. What we
well,
going to share
you know, I always thought that too. How interesting it is to hear somebody else's voice outside of your own reciting one of your poems. And to me, it's one of the most enlightening forms of insight that one can have.
Wow.
Well, thank you.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you so much, Michael. You know how I feel about you. All right. Thank you, sir. All right.
Yeah, listen, I appreciate it. Diane, God bless you. I noticed that you're 29 just like me.
Absolutely. And I'm going to be that forever.
All right.
All right.
We'll let
you
go.
Thank you, Michael.
God bless you both.
Bye.
All right. Bye now.
Okay, Diana. Okay. How can listeners stay in touch with you, Diana?
Well, they can follow me on Facebook, Diana Rosen. They can connect with me at diana@thetinypublisher.com. They can buy my books. And also, if they'd like to read more of what I have written, I have a portfolio under authory, authory.com / Diana Rosen. And you can learn all about my books on tea and food and read my flash and my poetry, and you can subscribe for free, and every time I write something, you'll get a copy of it.
Wow. You've been an incredible guest. An incredible
well, thank
guest.
You.
Hopefully you enjoyed this experience.
It's
been a roller coaster up and down.
That's right. Well, I was very touched to have a poem read back to me. It reminds me of this, it may be apocryphal, but there was a story about Pablo Neruda, and he was quite elderly, and he did a poetry reading, and he was seated at a table throughout all of it because he was, you know, frail. And so one of the people in the audience said, please read tonight, I Write the Saddest Words, which is one of his famous poems. And he says, oh, no, I'm too old. I'm too frail. I can't remember anything. And with that, the entire audience of 300 people stood up and read the poem to him.
Wow.
So I always wondered, would I ever have that opportunity? Not quite, but at least I got one poem read to me by one of your listeners, so that was close.
And remember you said,
if
there's only one poem, you're happy.
That's right. And it's on page 17 of my book.
I love it. What's next for you? Where
well,
do you go
been
from
a
here?
Great host, too.
Well, say, where do you go from here, Diana? Where do you go from here? What's next on your agenda?
Well, I'm trying to put together a book of only flash. This book has both poems and flash. And so I have a book of only flash. And then I have a second book. And this kind of ties in with whether or not you want to share things or not. And it's all about family stories. And I think the underlying dilemma of the family stories is, are they universal enough, despite how personal they are, that other people would respond to them in a good way? So when I get that answer, I'll let you know.
Oh, I love it. And, you know, you're welcome back here anytime. Anytime.
Thank
you. Just call me up.
Thank
email
you.
Me. And we'll do it again. All right.
I love it.
Well,
thank you so much for taking the time. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. All
you're
right.
You're the best host so far. Yeah. Thank you.
I really appreciate that. All right. I've got the biggest smile on my face. All right. I want to say good night to our guests. Did I get your last name right, Diana? Is it Rosen or Rosen?
Diana Rosen, R-O-S-E-N.
Okay. I didn't get a chance to ask you.
And that's it.
All right. I want to thank Diana Rosen for her wonderful, I can't even get it out, her wonderful, wonderful work. Please purchase her book, High Stakes and Expectations. Please purchase her book. So, as I share with everyone every week, let poetry ring somewhere throughout the land. Good night.
Good night.
Quintessential Listening, Poetry Online Radio, is available on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. You can also check out the website at QLPOR.com.